There was some football to discuss with the Giants yesterday, Sunday Night Football. As a matter of fact, I was actually more, the way the Met game was going, had the split screen up, but then the way the Met game was going, I was more into the Giants game. Look, the Giants would be a good football team if they had a real quarterback. Daniel Jones stinks. How many times do we got to watch the same stuff? They can't score. Plays are there to be made, BT, and he's not making them. They got a weapon now in Tracy. Even without Neighbors, they can move the football a little bit. The defense played out of their mind yesterday. Burns was a beast, even without Kayvon Thibodeau.
Yep.
Drew Phillips back, helping that secondary out. Giants have a legitimate defense. They're a well-coached team. They control the clock very well. Their game plan is good. They just don't have a quarterback that can execute.
Yeah, he misses throws that you have to make if you want to be that guy. That's it. I mean, the dissection's over, you know, and eventually, like, it's so crazy. We've had this conversation a million times, but here we are again. You know, we could cite us 1-14 primetime, the worst record since the 1970 merger. We all know the stats, okay? You should also probably know, and you probably do, but if you haven't actually seen it, let me tell you. So they played six games, and four of the six games they played, they scored 15 points or less. You can't win if you can't score. One of the reasons why the Jets aren't winning, we'll get to them in a minute. They're not scoring. And you watch Daniel Jones, not just the deep ball, even when they went for like five times on fourth down, so I appreciate the aggression. One was certainly reckless at their own, I think, 38. But when you're going to do that, and you're going to do that with somebody like Daniel Jones, it's probably not going to work out. That last play that was knocked away on 4th and 2, he didn't even give his receiver a chance to make a throw. That was such an easy knockdown by the corner, and he's just not it. That's all there is. He's not that guy, and he never will be.
And it limits, because of what Dable has in Jones, it limits to what he can do offensively, which is why you're seeing a lot more runs. I just don't understand why they've waited this long to unleash Jones running the football, because had they done it more Thursday night against the Cowboys, they could have beaten the Dallas Cowboys had they done this. But this is their MO. They're going to run it with Jones. They're going to look to make some plays. Now they have a running back. They have a good offensive line, which is important.
Yes.
Their defense is
sick. Although Thomas is hurt now.
Yeah, I know. That's going to be another whole issue. But still, hopefully it's not that big of a deal. But they have a good offensive line. Need to keep Thomas healthy. Get him and keep him healthy. Their defense is loaded. Like, their defense has the potential to be a terrific defense. It's going to grow and get better. So what's missing? They have Neighbors and a sick weapon when he comes back. Tracy looks like a stud
at
running back. Not to mention, if he does, you get Singletary back. Now you have the dual threat. But anyway, they have the pieces in place, and they have a smart coaching staff. It's the quarterback, and there are just too many limitations with him. And even when they try to open up a little bit, he can't throw the football down the field. He's not reading the right options. You know, when the play develops down the field to hit the open guy for a bigger play, it's Daniel Jones. He's just not good enough. He's holding them back. At first, we were just evaluating him, but now I really believe they could actually be a good football team if they had a semblance of a quarterback.
Well, I don't disagree with that. And all the things we've screamed about, you know, for years with the Giants, the offensive line, going back to Reese and going back to the gaping holes they've had seemingly forever, it's actually pretty good. Now, Andrew Thomas was going one-on-one last night. And he got burned. I think he gave up two, but he actually, you know, he played very well in certain spots. He also, you know, had that big penalty. That's a tough play to read. What are they called? Not the illegal shift. The ineligible receiver downfield. That's tough on the RPO, because you're not sure if Danny Jones is going to stick it or keep it or what's going on. So you try to read that. You're a couple of yards past the line of scrimmage. It was a 50-yard play. But we sit here every week and we watch Daniel Jones try to connect on a 40 or 50-yard pass. It's not even close. And it's either short or 5 yards too long, which at this level is like 20 yards too long. I mean, you should never miss somebody by that much. And the other problem, too, is think about how different it could be today for the Giant fans. If the Giants would have found a way to win last night, think about how Dallas looked. Dallas gave up 50. They're broken. Dallas is done. It's over. So forget about them. Commanders are good, but certainly not quite ready. And even the Eagles, who won.
Did you see that doofus yesterday?
Oh, my God.
Shaved head. I told you, man. Sirianni is a disaster. Talking trash to the fans barely beating the worst team, the Browns. I mean, come on.
You're not going to win that battle. But that's just furthering my point, because Dallas is broken and Philly, even in victory, is in flames. So it would have been a galvanizing win. Instead, it's another loss where we're like, geez, we watched, 60 minutes of football and they basically didn't score again.
You think that's it for them now? Meaning postseason?
Probably. I wasn't sure. Like, the way they looked against the Vikings, because I didn't think the Vikings were that good at that point yet. I'm like, oof. I mean, this thing could get really ugly. I don't think it ever gets so ugly, and that's part of the Dable effect for
sure. Right,
where they're picking, you know, top three, top four. That's Patriots territory, Panthers territory. You know, one or two others that I'm just not thinking about right now. So they'll probably be more in that 9 to 13 range. So who knows if they'll even get their quarterback? But you don't want to start talking about that now. It's not even quite well. It's the middle of October. Do you want to really have the draft discussion? The answer is no, and we won't. But the problem is the Giants are not going to be in a position to even get the quarterback that they so desperately need unless they give up a King's ransom to move up and get him. And next year, you're going to have to do it. There's no way. And this is not about denigrating Joe. I mean, just come on. He's been here forever.
I don't know if I'm the guy. I don't know if I'm going to give up hope yet that they could still be in 8, maybe 9 wins. No, it's going to ask a lot.
Uh-huh.
And the Bengals are a good football team who desperately needed a win.
Yep.
And I think there was a lot of encouraging things from the Giants last night, specifically that defense. But with Daniel Jones, you're going to be limited.
Well, they don't have a kicker either, so that's a huge issue.
I have no tolerance for that.
It's hurt their season. I mean, come on. The Commanders game in last night.
And the way that they play. Like, other teams could get away with it. The Chiefs could get away with not having a kicker because
they can score 40, but the old Chiefs teams.
Whoever.
The
way the Giants play, ball control, drive the football, you need points. You need the field goals. Yeah, they can't score touchdowns, so if you're not scoring touchdowns, how else are you going to score? You need to kick field goals. You keep me missing field goals. God, it's
tough to watch. You realize, I mean, you probably do. Daniel Jones hasn't scored a touchdown at home this year. Think about that, man.
I forget,
I think it's like 6 or 7 games dating back to he's the starting quarterback, and he's not scored a touchdown in his own crib.
Yeah, you're going to have
the whole year.
Also, look at the landscape of the NFC. The NFC East may not be dominant. The NFC West may not be dominant. Even the South, although the South, I think, has two better teams clearly than the Giants. You got the Niners, you got the Falcons, Bucks, four teams in the NFC North with 4 wins or more.
That's crazy.
And then you have the Eagles and Commanders. It's going to be tough.
They're not going to be a playoff team.
Okay, now.
But they are fighting, and Dable's doing a good job. They just need more weapons.
BT and Sal on the fan. We'll get back to your calls here in a second. 888-808-1019. The Jets, a huge game tonight. This is enormous, BT. New head coach with Ulbrich being the interim HC. You got the new play caller here with Downing, so no Hackett. Jets off the London trip, an embarrassing performance there against the Bills for the division. And if they don't win this game, I'm not going to say it's lights out for them, but this is a win that could go a long way and kind of change the entire feel of the Jets season tonight.
Not only do I think that the Jets are going to win tonight, but I think the Jets are going to finally give us a 4-quarter, you know, show where we're like, okay, this is where a lot of that hype was derived from. Now, the Patriots game was good, but the Patriots are awful. I mean, a good 4-quarter game against a good team. Even the Tennessee win, we hit a million to sloppy. Niners, they got rolled. Obviously, London was a disaster. Broncos was pathetic. I think, now again, schematically, and I said this to you when they changed, and we weren't sure. Ulbrich was elevated. Solid was gone, but we weren't sure for a day or so, even though we got remnants from reports that Hackett would be relegated to a role. I don't even know why. Steve probably shouldn't even be in the building.
Yeah.
And Downing's going to now call the plays. They're not going to take the playbook and come up with 100 new plays. You can't do that. Now, I do think they'll be a little less reliant of what Aaron Rodgers wants to do, because now it's no longer his best buddy calling the plays. It's a coach who just cares about the team. And I'm not saying Hackett didn't want to win, but he was biased towards Rodgers. They're best buddies. It is what it is. I think you'll see a little change there. I think you'll see much more aggression from Ulbrich. The Bills than Saleh. I think the Bills are vulnerable. They've missed Milano. They lost a lot of defensive players based on cap issues. I know Diggs, first couple games, they missed Diggs. Right. Trust me, they missed Stephon Diggs.
I don't think they miss him.
I think they miss him. And I think that Allen has always been harassed by the Jets, you know. So if they don't win tonight, it's over. I would imagine, unless they just go on an unlikely run at this point. I think they win, and I think they look terrific tonight.
I just think the Bills are better. Flat out, the Bills are better.
Where? Outside of quarterback, where else?
Well,
I mean, that's a big thing.
Yeah.
I know. Where else?
I think they're better everywhere else.
They're not better on defense.
The Bills have scored.
They're not better on defense.
The Bills in five. Okay, I'll give the Jets defense a bit.
That's one-third of the game.
Jets defense a bit. Well, it hasn't worked for the Jets in how many years?
Well, but you got to score. Well, that's where the play call comes in.
Okay, so now I'm supposed to expect that Obrick, who's never coached a game in his life as far as a head coach goes, he's going to be this great head coach. And now Downing, who's not been a good offensive play caller in his history, he's going to be incredible with Aaron Rodgers running the show.
I'm not saying that. No. I think that's crazy.
The Bills in five games, for you saying, well, they missed Diggs and Allen's having a down year and the Bills aren't the same. They've scored 142 points.
Mm-hmm.
The Jets have scored 93. I'm just saying there's a big difference in where, even if the Bills come back down to earth.
They've already started the last two games. Okay. Their descent has begun.
Right. I still don't think it's low enough to catch where the Jets are at.
Listen,
Jets going to have to show that they could climb up.
Yeah.
As well as the Bills. Bills have to descend, which may start to be happening, but it's only a couple of games. I'm still not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jets have to climb to get to their level. So I just think the disparity is still great. Hey, look, we're going to see tonight. And by the way, even in one game, like we saw the Jets beat them last year with Zach Wilson. So it's not like if they did
and
beat
him before with Zach.
Yeah. All right. So it's not like they can't beat the Bills.
Exactly.
But it's that they can't be better than the Bills over the long period.
I still think that they could. Now, it remains to be seen if they are. I think that they could. Now, that's a contestable statement. You don't think it seems very reasonable, but I think that it's at least up for interpretation. Like, if you take away us being in New York and me being, and I'm not saying this because I want the Jets to win. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I bury them as much as anybody when I have to. I do think they win tonight, right? But if you take somebody that doesn't have any emotional connection to our city or the Jets, I don't think it's an unrealistic, irresponsible, cavalier conversation or thought to say that if the Jets click in a little spot or two, that they could slightly bump past the Bills. I'm going to stand by that statement. I think that could happen, right? Now, let me ask you this, though, because you don't buy it, and that's fine. You have said, and I didn't disagree, Saleh was the worst coach in the NFL. The worst.
Right.
Okay, so even though he probably should have been fired, it was the scapegoat, the worst. He did nothing for the team. If we both agree with that, and his record, you know, illustrates that that's not an irresponsible statement either, even if Ulbrich is not great, which nobody's going to say he's Bill Walsh, he's not even offense, but if he's slightly better, would you give me that there's a little room for uptick for the Jets? If he's slightly better than the worst coach in the league?
Sure.
Okay. If you have the proper tweak or two, not an overhaul, you're not going to have guys in motion. Rodgers doesn't want that.
Yeah.
But you change things up just a little, which opens up the running game just a little. With the Jets, which I think will happen, with the Jets defense and a slight uptick in offense, do you not see the Jets becoming one of the more balanced teams in the NFL?
No, I don't.
Okay, that's where we disagree.
Yeah,
I do.
I need to actually see it before I believe it.
I got you.
Let's see them run the football tonight. Should be a fascinating matchup.
Huge. It's huge.
It is a huge game. Monday Night Football, of course, at the Jets. We got the Yankees game one, ALCS. We got the Mets game two, NLCS. A lot going on here. 888-808-1019, BT and Sal on the Fan. Billy is in Bloomfield, New Jersey. What's up, Billy?
Bill, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Jason is calling from Stony Brook. What's up, Jason?
Hey, guys. What's up? Great show.
Thank you.
I know I'm short on time, but I just wanted to get these points in. I agree with you guys for the most part. Sal, I've always felt the way you felt about Daniel Jones. I never would have drafted him. I don't think he's as athletic or as good as those that do like him feel about him. So I never would have drafted him. He's a nice kid. What I don't understand is that why Dable's getting so much credit, BT. Like you said, he's doing a good job. I don't think he's doing a good job.
Go ahead.
He's won two games by default. His offense is doing nothing. He's an offensive coach. And if you don't like Daniel Jones, which him and Shane basically told us, and the owner in Hard Knocks, why does he keep, like, why aren't we playing musical chairs with the quarterbacks? You got Drew Locke. Put him in at the end. Put him in the second half and see what he's got. He may give us a chance to win a game. Is Dable really trying to win games, or is he looking ahead and saying, you know what, I don't have my quarterback.
He's not a dummy.
Sorry, Jason. Thank you for the call.
A good call. Love the passion. I'd say this. I mean, eventually there might be a time for Drew Locke. That time is not now. Although maybe it's starting to approach more rapidly than we thought. I mean, I'm not saying I'm not open-minded to it. That's number one. But I think, like, how would the Giants' season be perceived if they had a kicker against the Commanders? Now, we can obviously complain about the clerical decision not to maybe roster somebody else or do something to circumvent the issue that he had going into the game, which, even though it was a little bit of a different party, lower part of his body, but I think it's all connected. So maybe they weren't on top of that. But that's not just Dable. That's Shane. That's an organizational decision when it comes to the roster. If they would have won that game, I mean, you know, I think it feels kind of like the season we anticipated the Giants having. If we were sitting here during the summer saying, man, this Giants offense is going to be awesome. These Giants, they're going to win 11, 12 games. We thought the Giants would be average at best.
Right.
So to me, I can't get on a coach, I mean really get on a coach, like we got on with Saleh and some others over the years, when if you're not woefully underachieving, and I don't think that the Giants are.
Right, the coach, to me, you could watch him. Now, again, his record is what it is this year, 2-4, and there are games that the Giants like get away from him, and he's the head coach. But ultimately, to me, he's taken a team with less talent, meaning the quarterback specifically on the offense, and has had them competitive in every game. Giants have played one bad football game. The first one. And that was against a team who was undefeated, for goodness sake. But that was the one bad football game that you watch the game and you go, oh my God. So much so that the reporters were calling for Dable's job, saying that the circus is about to begin. Wrongfully so, as we said here on this show, what are these guys talking about? That's ridiculous to even say that. It's going off the rails after one game. But the Vikings were much better than anybody thought. It was one bad game. Giants played a good game in week two without a kicker, and they barely lost to the Commanders. Didn't allow a touchdown. Obviously, we know what happened there. You should never lose that game. If you play that game 99 of 100 times, you would win. Scoring, what was it, 3 touchdowns, not allowing one, but still losing a game.
Yeah, that stat that goes back to the history of the game. Nobody.
It's ridiculous. Okay, so that's a bad loss. Beat the Browns, even though they didn't play a clean game. Giants are much more talented this year than they've been in years past because they can even get away with making mistakes and not playing a perfect game. They started out as bad as you can against Cleveland, come back and win the game. The Cowboy game Thursday night. They were in that game and could have won that game. Now, they didn't, and that's, you know, they needed to, BT, open up Daniel Jones running a little bit more to win that game. They didn't, whatever, but they lost a close game. Again, not good enough, you lose, but then they go out there and they steamroll the Seahawks. Score didn't say that, but the play did.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, this game against the Bengals, they had more than an opportunity to win this game. Defense was terrific against Burrow, and offensively, couldn't score any touchdowns.
And again, their kicker missed a chippy at this point. 47 to chippy, and they bypassed him at the end because they're terrified that he couldn't hit one, and he probably wouldn't.
At some point, being in the games is not good enough, and I think we're at that point. Like, they got to start winning these games.
Yep.
But overall, big picture, relative to the expectation and what they have to work with, I think there's much more encouraging signs that the Giants and Joe Shane and Dable have built a nice roster. They have solid game plan. They need a quarterback.
I agree with you. I think, now that doesn't mean that you have to be happy with the results. Clearly you're not, but there's a big difference between understanding the situation, which I think most Giant fans do. Well, look, I get tired of losing, understood. But I think when you take out the emotion, which is hard to do sometimes, but when you do it and you really look at it pragmatically, I mean, how many, without Malik Nabers, how many starters on offense are going to start on any good team around the NFL?
Right.
Andrew Thomas, you know, maybe Runyon, anybody else?
The line play is better. You know, no, they need to get Nabers back. But the quarterback is missing plays. What do you got for the Yanks? You want to talk about your boy Judge?
I said something so stupid. All right, so we all know the Judge is scuffled, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the theme. The average this season, this series, 154, 13 official plate appearances, 5 whiffs. It's got the highest strikeout rate of anybody in Major League postseason history with 200 at-bats or more. Now, there's a direct correlation. I've said this. I think he changes his approach. Well, number one, the pitching is better in the postseason. I think his approach changes. His chase rate is up. His contact rate is down. And when that happens, you're going to strike out more. That's pretty basic stuff. I'm going to ask you this. You think about the old-time Yankees, right, mm-hmm. the champions, whether it was Reggie, no water, A-Rod, Bernie, O'Neill, Tino, obviously Jeter. But I'm talking about more power guys. Okay. Obviously Jeter, right? That's why I said those names.
Yeah.
Even Munson, Nettles back then. They all had protection. They all had guys around them who were legitimate studs. Judge is the only one who has not. Now, I'm not making excuses for him, but we got to contextualize this a little bit. And I like Austin Wells. He's like 1-for-30.
Yeah.
And he's a kid, and he's behind Aaron Judge. So do we need to, I don't want to say be less critical, because it is what it is. You got to win eventually.
Well, why don't you move Big Bad Stanton, Big G, behind him then?
Something they could do, especially now that Stanton's swinging the bat well.
I mean, enough with the excuses. How many more stars do the Yankees need? I mean, they already have the highest active payroll in baseball. We know what they are. They're superstars. They got Juan Soto and Aaron Judge. Judge doesn't have a protection. How do you hit 62 home runs? How do they, you know, have a monstrous MVP year again with no protection? So what's the difference? The difference is he's pressing in the postseason, clearly. And by the way, if that is the excuse, and you're right, like Austin Wells has been a zero. One of the things that clicked when the Yankees started to play a little bit better brand of baseball in the second half of the year or post-All-Star break, whatever it was with Austin Wells emerging.
Yeah, they put him four.
Okay,
changed
right.
a lot.
Okay, so now if Stanton's on fire and Big G, who's big in the postseason, okay, then bat him fifth. And then it should be no excuse. It should be Glaber, Soto, Judge, Stanton. Boom, 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 boom. And go out there and wrap up the Guardian series in, what, four or five games and mash their way to the World Series.
And for the record, no, there's no more excuses for Judge. He's 32. This is, he's got a lot of years left on his deal, but he's not all of them are going to be in his prime. So
right. You
want to be an all-time great Yankee encompassing everything, he's going to have moments. I believe he will because I believe in greatness, unless he's hurt, which
Me
I don't
too.
Think he is.
Like, if he doesn't smash Cobb tonight.
I'm expecting some good stuff this series because I loved his at-bats the last, even the last two games, but certainly the last game in Kansas City. You know, I think the key to the Yankees here is because the Guardians' bullpen is really good. They got to tee off on these starters. And they've got to, like the Dodgers got to the Mets' bullpen a lot early. I mean, the Senga gave you nothing. So And Peterson wasn't great either. But they had to go a little deeper than they wanted to early. If the Yankees could put up a couple of crooked ones early and get like six, seven runs and get Cleveland on their heels and get into their bullpen in game one, now you get momentum, and now you could win this. I don't want to say easily.
But you start to rip their soul out as well when you do that.
Yeah, you could win this a little quicker. If you don't, and the bullpen's fresh for game two and three, you're gonna have a tight series.
If the Yankees don't get to Cobb tonight early, I think that's going to be a bad sign for them in this series. Like, that's a matchup. They should just destroy him early on.
You know what? I can't push it that forward. I know what you like. I get it on some level. You're supposed to hit this guy. Understood. But, you know, what is one? If that's the case, you know, where would the faith? Well, I mean, the Mets' faith would be from how they played the last 2 months. I get it. But I would say, like, if we react to one game, I think it would feel a little more ominous for the Mets.
It's like, but it's not one game.
Well, that's true.
And the Yankees are home and they're favorites, favorites in this series.
No, they better win.
Series. And the Yankees' offense has been the problem historically with them in the postseason. If they can't hit Cobb, then they're going to be in trouble because, like you said, Cleveland's bullpen is the strength.
Yeah.
So if the Yankees aren't getting fat off of the starters, like, that's how the Yankees have made their name, getting fat off of less than starters or underbellies of bullpens. The good pitching is potentially a problem for them, especially in a postseason. So, I mean, if they don't come out crushing Cobb tonight, I think that's a discouraging sign moving forward.
I think that somebody who needs to hit better and just look better is Grisham. Got to have better at bats. And the other thing, too, you know, when we say, and we kind of roll it into one big sloppy ball, like, you know, since 09, the Yankees, honestly, the Yankees lineups have been very unproductive in October, but have they been unproductive? Let me take a quick step back. Show me the Yankee team that had a lineup that was built to be a World Series winner that underachieved. There are none. The young kids kind of overachieved. You go back to, you know, years ago at this point. And every other team, like in 2022, when the Yankees lost to the Astros, and they just looked inept and futile and impotent, like, that lineup stunk. So it's easy and it's accurate to say that, well, the Yankees haven't hit in October for a while, but the Yankees haven't hit because they haven't had good hitters. They're not outside of Judge.
Right.
He's the only guy. It's like, it's a little mystifying.
Well, Stan's been here.
Yeah, but Stanton up until for the first 2-3 years was good.
Think
about it. You're running Hicks out there. You're running Gallo out there. You're running three or four different first basemen. Three or four different catchers. Like, they just didn't have good hitters.
Glaber's been the mainstay. Judge, obviously. Stanton.
And that's it.
Well, I mean, Rizzo's been here now for a few years.
Yeah, but when they got him, he was, you know, think about this. If Rizzo was an awful first baseman,
we would
look at him like, dude, just retire. Like, because he's a good fielder and because he's got a little lefty
pop. I actually think they're better off with Birdie, as crazy as that sounds.
I said that the other day. Yeah. I thought he looked great, and I know he can run, and I know he could give you quality at bats. There's a lot there. All I'm saying is, this Yankees lineup, what I said, you know, in the middle of the season, I said at the start of the series with Casey, I'm saying it now. This Yankees lineup is as good as they've had in, I don't know how many years, I'll let you figure it out yourself. It's at least 10. And if they don't hit and they don't win, it is just unacceptable. You're supposed to win this series.
BT and Sal on the Fan. Alex is in Southampton, New Jersey. What's up, Alex?
Hey, yeah.
Yeah, guys. I'm from Manhattan originally. You guys know me, but I moved now to Jersey, but now I got to get used to that.
Congrats.
But man, I love you guys. I thank you very much. I love you guys. I mean, it's hard to get in contact with you. So that means good. But BT.
Yes.
Really, BT, you have me laughing. I expect more from you, BT.
Go ahead.
Outlandish excuse for Judge. He don't have protection.
Are you kidding me?
Well,
protection? The best statistical hitting player in a long time. Didn't need protection during the regular season. What are we talking about protection? Didn't have protection before with Stanton hitting. Stanton always hit in the playoffs. And he never did nothing in the years before.
No, but Alex, let me just throw one thing in. I want to make sure you don't completely hijack what I'm saying. I'm not making an excuse for Judge. I mean, Judge. Everybody's got to hear me say this. Judge must show up, period. There's nothing else to add.
Okay.
Must show up.
Okay.
Must.
Okay.
All I'm saying is the other guys, the Reggies, the Munsons, the A-Rods, the Birdies, the Tinos, the O'Neills, even Jeter as a non-power, everybody else had the benefit of quality hitters up and down the lineup. He is not. It's not an excuse. It's a fact. Now, eventually, you got to elevate over that. You got to stop chasing on sliders in the dirt on 0-0 count. You got to get back in the driver's seat, 2-0, 2-1, 3-0, 3-1. The reason you're not is because you're stepping out of your approach. Fix it. And I think that he will. I'm just saying the Yankees lineup has sucked for years. It's been incredibly overrated. And by the way, more evidence, the guys that they finally jettisoned, who's doing anything anywhere? Like, who did the Yankees finally lop off the roster that's crushing it somewhere? They're lucky if they're even in baseball anymore.
But it's been the same team this year that you say is their best lineup that they've had.
No. Grisham's back. Grisham's new. Jazz is new.
Right. I'm saying this team.
Yep.
The good lineup that they have. And where was Judge then in the four games against Kansas City?
Well, it's four games.
But they were booing him against the Guardians a year ago or 2 years ago in the first round.
And the Astros, and I was there, and right. I didn't love the boos, but do what you got to do. I'm not trying to shield Aaron Judge. I'm just saying it is four games. I liked his at-bats later in the series. I do believe he's going to start hitting very early in this series, but until he does, it's a point of contest. I get it.
Joe is in Westchester. What's up, Joe?
Got a hit.
Oh, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
What's up, Joe?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
How you doing? Man, guys, it's been so long, man, since 2015, whatever, we've been waiting. What in the heck is Carlos Mendoza doing with this guy, Kodai Senga? Is this like a contract thing? He didn't make the cut. As far as I'm concerned, this dude didn't do anything to earn that spot. And he even messed up in the Philly game. He went out there, he immediately gives up his home run, I think, to Schwarber. Mm-hmm. Why are you even putting him in the game, man? It's ridiculous.
Even in golf,
if your name was Tiger Woods at one time, you had to make the freaking cut to get out there and play with the big boys. And then you're talking about game five of this dude. Come on, if it was Severino or any one of the other guys, we'd be having a different conversation.
Well, let me just play it out with you real quick, Joe. Who would you rather have start a postseason game? Kodai Senga, Tylor Megill, or David Peterson?
I don't think we have to shuffle.
No, I'm just asking you that question. I'm just asking you that question. If I had to ask you, who would you rather start? Kodai Senga, David Peterson, or Tylor Megill?
David Peterson, because I haven't seen anything from Kodai Senga.
Right, okay.
I've seen a little from him.
Last year, and that's a fair answer, and thank you for the call. The reason why I ask it that way.
Not a bad answer.
Right.
Peterson's been good lately.
Right, but Kodai Senga was an all-star a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I ask it, that was the choice that they had for the first round. I'm not even going to waste the time asking you who would you rather start, Sean Manaea, Severino, Quintana, Peterson, Megill, or Kodai Senga, because Kodai Senga would be at the bottom of that list or toward the bottom of that list. But in the first round, Kodai Senga was their best choice. And remember, the one guy that you would have chosen, David Peterson, was a weapon out of the bullpen against Milwaukee. And for me, knowing that Senga was not going to be a weapon out of the bullpen, I'd rather go Senga and have Peterson piggyback him and use Peterson out of the bullpen than I would start Peterson and just not have Senga at all. Game one of the division series, it made perfect sense. Game one of the championship series, it made zero sense. You have Manaea, you have Severino and Quintana, who all have been far better than Kodai Senga this year. All year long. All year long, they've all been better than Senga. And yet the Mets chose to go with Kodai Senga in game one. To me, it just made no sense.
You know what I think it is? I don't know if it's confusing people, but it's certainly raising the energy levels as they process the Senga decision. And we know why it's been abrupt, but it was just kind of jammed in there. Like, it was abrupt. Like, Senga was a non-entity, then he comes back, and he hurts his calf, and then you're like, all right, see you in spring training, I guess, see you in February down in Port St. Lucie, and then all of a sudden, he's back. Now, Sal's right. I agree with that. The decision to go game one against the Phillies based on the other stuff was a no-brainer.
It just fit. Like, it was a perfect storm.
Yep. You know, hey, if he could give us 35, 40 pitches, we'll roll it out. And we got Peterson, righty, lefty. Let's go.
Nobody else available. We played a doubleheader Monday. We played three straight games Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Game one Saturday. Like, they were up against it.
Yeah, I think it's very easy to forget just how hellacious their schedule was and the logistical challenges that the Mets were facing. But again, to do it last night, because he didn't look very good against the Phillies and there were other options, the response is, why are we moving mountains to get this guy on the mound? He wasn't even that good in Philly, though we understand why he got the ball. I wouldn't give him the baseball the rest of October unless he's willing to come out of the pen. He looks awful.
And think about that.
Last night he was awful.
The guy that most people now say they wouldn't want to see on the mound again, they chose to start game one. I wouldn't even be opposed to bringing him back in game five because the way that they laid it out now. And again, who knows? We'll see how it plays out. But starting in game one was absolutely asinine. BT and Sal on the Fan. More your calls on the other side. 888-808-1019. Carlos Rodon starting game one tonight for the Yankees and the Bronx. Catch all the action right here on the Fan with John and Susan. Can't wait for the ALCS, BT.
No, and I can't wait for you to just shred him. I'm going to have to sit here and listen to you about Rodon, and I can't really push back later.
He's got
to
be better tonight. I mean, if he's not better.
I'd almost take a shaky start and finish better rather than looking like, you know, Sandy Koufax and just imploding into BP. We'll get to that coming up as well.
Yeah. So Nimmo apparently is going to be good to go in game two. I just want to, he should be good to go in game two. Now all of a sudden we're hearing about a plantar fasciitis. If he's hurt, he's hurt. Then sit him out and figure it out. But Brandon Nimmo has been killing the team. And just on that quick narrative, BT, where there was this thought, and we touched on it last week, the core, right? Well, Stern saying that the narrative that this core couldn't get the job done is total BS. And anybody who thought that, you know, whatever, like they've proven themselves that they could. Well, let me ask you, what exactly have they proven? That they could get to a championship series? That's what this core was built to do? Was Brandon Nimmo given the contract he was given to get to a championship series? Was Pete Alonso, like Pete Alonso getting paid $20 million a year, and he wants a big contract, but Pete Alonso is getting paid some decent money here. He's been an integral part of this team for years. Lindor, you know the contract for him. Diaz, you know the contract for him. Marte's getting paid like... This core group, McNeil, you know what he got paid.
Mm-hmm.
So this team was put together to what? To win a wild card round in the division series. So while they proved that they weren't total chokers the way that they did in 2022, it doesn't mean that they've accomplished their goal yet. And every time you watch them, Brandon Nimmo, you know, unfortunately, for a three hitter, he's had some decent moments, but like, Where is he?
I almost feel like Marte's been involved in some of the offense more than Nimmo.
Marte and Nimmo both could do a little bit more. Vientos has had his moments, but still a young player. Like, it's been Lindor with the major homers, and Alonso had the one major homer that saved the season and followed up with home runs against Philadelphia in back-to-back games. But, like, this core, the idea that, oh, well, that narrative, is it? Because, to me, when you build a core like that, you're trying to win a championship.
Well... See, what's interesting about all this, you know, Stearns didn't inherit this.
Right.
And it was pieced together maybe a little hastily early. Now, the Lindor contract certainly seems different now than it did maybe 4 or 5 months ago. You're much more okay with it. Maybe some of you were always okay with it. I did question it, whatever. But
I think everybody questioned it, including the owner himself, because of the way the market went.
Okay.
So there was two elements of it.
Okay.
Like the market and then the performance of the player. Now, right now, you'd take that.
Yeah, nobody's complaining about that.
But
now,
by the way, it's still a lot of freaking money.
It is for a lot of years. Eventually he can move to second base or
whatever,
third. And he's still a very good athlete, but he's the least of their issues, as we know.
Right.
It's almost when I look at the core, and we know the core is, no, they're not built to win a wild card. I don't know what they're built for, because if you didn't have Vientos pop through this year and Manaea become an ace, and Iglesias, who was in the minors with Vientos, basically come up and be your five hitter most games, and one of your absolute two best hitters really night to night, Mets aren't even a playoff team.
Right.
So that's why it's very hard.
I get it.
You respect the grit for sure. And you note the accomplishment, and they're still playing. And they could get to the World Series.
Right.
But the core, I literally at the end, the core got them there. But if you look at their renaissance for 3 months, I mean, Pete didn't. Lindor was great. Pete right. didn't do really anything. The other guys I mentioned who did a ton.
Well, that's kind of my point. Of the core. Like the idea that they and yes, the Mets came out of nowhere. We've heard the story before. The way that this year went, and sure, they won that wild card round and beat the Phillies in the division series, but. To take bows and say, like, well, that narrative that this core can't get over the hump, that to me is nonsense. Look at the Dodgers with Betts, Freeman, Ohtani.
Yeah.
And not to mention Teoscar Hernandez, who might be better than everybody in the club.
Their so catcher's
like,
terrific.
Like, their lineup is absolutely loaded.
Yep.
And they're doing what they should be doing. They should be competing to play in the World Series. The Yankees, you know, should be where they are in the
Ball
American League Championship
over.
Series.
American
and
League
potentially
Division
moving
series
beyond
over.
That and getting themselves to the World Series, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
This was the Mets group. Like, there was not, okay, well, you know, remember 2 years ago they won 101 games. And should have won the division. And they were looking at, like, hey, this is going to be a legitimate group. Well, okay, that group, like, to say that they've slayed all those narratives that they can't get it done,
yep.
to me is just not correct at this point. You should be expecting more. And as they've gone on here now, we need to see Nimmo actually start to do something and Alonso to continue to do something. That's just for me, I want a little bit more than...
Well,
taking bows for this.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, I won't say I push back, but I certainly question, you know, and we'll see what the offseason moves, and that could include Soto. That's a discussion for when the season's over.
Yeah.
But
don't you think they need him, though?
They do. They need somebody like, yes, they need somebody like him.
Like
no
that
question.
Type
There's
of.
No doubt. They need a guy
like when
that,
you
yeah.
watch their lineup.
Yeah, they need a guy like
and
that.
And that's why, like I tweeted during the Bruins, they just don't have enough.
No, I remember.
Now, who knows? They could still get to the World Series. They could even win it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at their lineup.
I know. I mean, it's the Winkers, and it's the Iglesias, and it's the Taylors, and it's the Baders when he's playing. I mean, respect to all of them.
Alvarez has done nothing.
Nothing. That's disappointing. But that's why I would push back a little bit. Like, when you would talk about, and this is what every Met fan wants. I've heard this many times, and I get it. Sustained success.
Right.
Not one good year, and then unravel for 3 years, then have a little pop, then take 3 steps back. You want to do, like, what the Yankees and Dodgers do, and be very good for a lot of years, and then win a championship, too. I get it. Or two. But when I look at the roster now, Pete's probably back based on his heroics, okay? But first base is not fully guaranteed back yet, though he's probably. Second base... I don't know who's playing second base next year. Alvarez, I like him, but he hasn't really done a lot this year. Love Vientos, the way he hits.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's serviceable third. I think he's fine. Don't love Nimmo's contract. Don't love Nimmo's production. Don't love right field. Manaea and Severino, you talk about $20-plus million qualifying offers. Like, you don't love your clothes. You don't trust them. There's a lot of moving parts.
Right.
So I get what you're saying.
Yeah, that's exactly my point. Like, they have had a terrific season, but there's work to be done here.
Mm-hmm.
And before I just say, well, this core can do it. No, I think each guy has had individual clutch moments, but as a group, there's work to be done.
Do you think Met fans disagree with what you just said? Because I think what you said makes a ton of sense.
I don't know if they disagree or not, but I know from like Anthony DeComo had another article that I read yesterday. I talked a little bit about this on my show yesterday as I did the Sunday show.
Uh-huh.
And just like slaying the narrative of that this core couldn't get the job done. And Stearns himself said, well, that's BS. Well, is it? Because I still like to see more from Brandon Nimmo. Or Pete Alonso. Like, yeah. Alonso had the most clutch home run I've ever seen in my life, mm-hmm. which saved their season. But again, when you watch him come up last night, are you like, all right, Pete's going to get the job done here?
No, and there was a comment during one of his at-bats where, you know, Smoltz, when he wasn't shouting at his sister for birthday wishes or taking a snooze in the in the booth, he said, listen, Pete's got to be more aggressive. He's just, you know, he's passively letting some pitches he thinks he can handle go through the zone, and then, you know, you start to nibble, and instead of, you know, being that, again, that 2-0, 2-1, 3-0, 3-1 spot where you can let's go, now it's big boy time. It's time to rock one 450. Something it's 1-2,
right.
And now they can nibble, and it's just tougher to hit that way.
Real quick, because
we've got
a break.
Got it.
Come back, reset, hit you with the crown topic of the day. We got everything going on. Mets, Yanks, Jets, Giants. When I ask you, like, your confidence level of when a batter comes up that mm-hmm. they're going to deliver, Lindor.
Number one.
Yeah, like
Iglesias is number two, and Vientos is number three.
Okay, so you have confidence in Vientos.
Oh, yeah.
You're right. Me too. Like, Lindor, all right, he's going to get the job done.
Yeah,
if he
yeah,
doesn't,
yeah.
he'll get it done next time. Vientos, I believe in him.
Yep.
Nimmo?
No.
And Alonso?
No.
I mean, those are the three four-hitters, and half of what... supposedly mm-hmm. is the core. BT and Sal on the Fan. More of your calls when we come back. Resetting with the crown topic of the day. Also getting you set for Game 1 tonight at the stadium. Carlos Rodon, he goes for the Bombers. Catch all the action right here on the Fan.